With book bans in public schools rising to levels unseen since the McCarthy-era Red Scare of the 1950s, the Eleanor Roosevelt Banned Book Awards Ceremony at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie, New York, will be presented jointly with PEN America on Saturday, October 11th. Author Jennifer Finney Boylan, PEN America's president, will be the keynote speaker. The Eleanor Roosevelt Awards honor individuals who embrace her call to build a better world through humanitarian efforts in education, advocacy, social justice, and civil and human rights. The ceremony will celebrate authors who have championed intellectual freedom and the fight against censorship during Banned Books Week 2025, an annual event that highlights the freedom to read and the censorship of books in libraries and schools. 10 honorees, including best-selling author Margaret Atwood, known for The Handmaid's Tale, will receive the Eleanor Roosevelt Lifetime Achievement Award at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie on October 11th. To tell us more about this event being put on by PEN America and the Eleanor Roosevelt Center, we welcome Casey Meehan, PEN America's Freedom to Read Program Director, Becky Calzada, Librarian and this year's Literary Freedom Award honoree, and Melinda Lowe, honoree for the book Last Night at the Telegraph Club. I welcome you all to the roundtable this morning. Thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
Let us begin with you, Casey, of how this event came about and working with the Eleanor Roosevelt Center.
Yeah, so I'll fill in a little bit, knowing that our friends at the Eleanor Roosevelt Center couldn't be on this call today. But really, you know, PEN is really just, PEN America is excited to partner with the Eleanor Roosevelt Center. This is the second annual Banned Book Awards. And, you know, I think we, you know, it was just like a really impressive ceremony last year. And we're so excited that the Eleanor Roosevelt Center was able to, you know, bring it back this year, and PEN America is a, you know, was just a perfectly aligned partner, I would say, in supporting this work. I mean, PEN has been tracking the state of book bans now since 2021, which we know are continuously elevated across our public schools and public libraries. So just an important moment where, you know, the ceremony also lands on the back end of National Banned Books Week, which is a really just pivotal, you know, national awareness campaign that so many organizations will be a part of to raise awareness on the fight against book bans. So anyway, just really excited to be a part of the event, just really inspired by all the awardees and panelists, and looking forward to it.
I think it's interesting, Casey, to note the fact that while many of us have heard about Banned Book Week and perhaps have participated in events in the past, and this is something that has been going on for many years, that the problem still exists. It's very real, and it's very, very much here now and continues to be, and perhaps at an alarming rate, as I mentioned in the introduction. Can you give us a sense of sort of what the state of things are at this moment?
Yeah, and this is, you know, it's a well-timed conversation that we're having. PEN America is we will be releasing our annual Banned in the USA report on October 1st, where we once again will present the state of book bans. And this is the fourth year of our tracking. And once again, we just see exceptionally elevated levels of book bans. So from 2021, where we first started, this most recent report tracks nearly 23,000 instances of book bans across 45 states and almost over 450 public schools. So we, you know, again, we see this as a really escalated crisis that's just affecting so many public schools, public school districts, educators, librarians, students, families, authors, illustrators, and creatives in, you know, this really coordinated campaign to pull out certain types of literature from our public school systems.
Becky, give us a sense of what this is like from a librarian's perspective, the challenges to libraries and literature, and ultimately what it takes to promote freedom in those spaces.
Sure. So as Casey shared, you know, we are experiencing an unprecedented and historical amount of challenges that are happening. And I think there's so many that don't understand that libraries are cornerstones of democracy. And so we want to be able to provide opportunities for people to have access to books and, of course, the ideas that are in these books, knowing that, they're not going to be popular with everyone, but again, just having that access is important. We're certainly seeing a lot of books about race, history, LGBTQ lives being challenged and oftentimes removed. And so those voices are not present in those spaces. And one of the things that we know is critical is for communities to show up and to show their support. There's a small minority that is driving this, that are highly organized. And so people, if we want to continue to provide access, whether it's in our schools or in our public library spaces, there is a lot of research that says that people on all sides believe in the opportunities to have access to ideas and books. And so showing up at public board meetings, school board meetings, and speaking up and making your voice heard makes a difference.
As I mentioned, you are going to be receiving this year's Literary Freedom Award. What have you do you feel you've been able to accomplish as a librarian that sort of helps in this effort of trying to make these books as accessible as they possibly can be?
So I've been doing this since 2021. I've been a librarian now for 20 plus years. And so in terms of the things that I've been able to do, I've found is in terms of education and building transparency about processes and things, there's so many people that don't understand, how libraries work, how books are purchased. They don't even understand, what students have access to. Oftentimes the books that trouble, and I say that in quotation marks, people are portrayed as being accessible to elementary school students. And so when you're in a school setting and you have young adults in high schools, we want to be able to provide the information and books that meet their needs, that allow them to think critically and to see their lives demonstrated within the pages of a book. And so in terms of being of what I do, I work hard to build understanding, to connect with others, to help bridge that gap, and to share information about how to speak up, to give people the tools to be able to do the work, to advocate for the access of those books.
One of the things that you just said that I think is such an important point is that the effort is coming from a very small number of people and programs, but obviously it does have a large impact.
It does. And I think, again, oftentimes because these things don't get reported, the greater community doesn't even realize that these actions are happening. So staying engaged, visiting your school library, checking in, reminding the go various governance boards to follow their policies in terms of access and following processes is so critical.
You can go to ervk.org for more information about the event, the Eleanor Roosevelt Banbook Award Ceremony at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie on October 11th. Melinda Lowe will be an honoree on that evening, and she'll be honored for her book Last Night at the Telegraph Club. Melinda, I'm curious as to congratulations, first of all, and I'm also curious as to what it is like to be on the front lines of this and to know what you are writing has touched a nerve with so many children, so many kids, so many young adults, and yet in other quarters is banned.
Well, thank you. I'm really honored to be receiving this award. And I just want to clarify that Last Night at the Telegraph Club is a young adult novel. It is intended for older teens and young adults. So I honestly hope that young children are not reading it. I don't think they
Right.
would like it. I mean, I think they would be bored.
Yes.
It's been a long time this has been going on. The book came out in 2021, and when I won the National Book Award, I actually said in my speech, there's this rising tide of book bans across the country, especially targeting queer and trans books. And I said, don't let them erase us. And I am really saddened that it has only gotten worse in the last 4 years. And in the course of this, I've been speaking out about book bans a lot, and I've met a lot of writers who've had their works banned. And I want to make sure I say one thing. Clearly. I want to note that book bans directly affect writers economically. I want to make sure this is clear because a lot of people think that getting banned means your book is going to be a bestseller. That never happens. That's not a thing. Okay. So it leads to libraries and schools removing your books from their shelves if they own it. It also has a chilling effect on schools and libraries. That means if your book is banned, schools and libraries are less willing to buy your books. And sometimes they don't buy them. They preemptively don't buy it. And this is what we call soft censorship or quiet censorship. That means fewer book sales to schools and libraries. That directly means authors get lower royalties. We get lower book sales. That means our publishers are less willing to publish our next books. Additionally, many children's and YA authors generate a big portion of their income from paid school visits. And since 2021 and the rise in book banning, I know for a fact that children's and YA authors have seen their school visits decline a lot, especially if you're an author of color or a queer author, or you write books about people of color or queer folks. You're not getting paid for your work in the same way. So this is a really devastating effect financially. Obviously, it also has psychological effects. You know, we get harassed online. We are also called groomers or pedophiles. Our work is denigrated as pornography. This is frankly difficult to deal with. So, on all levels, on many levels, book banning has been entirely devastating for authors, from basic economics, which I don't think we talk about enough, all the way through to online harassment and honestly, a general pervasive sense of dread around writing about topics that are often banned.
Talk about that sense of dread of writing about those topics, because there is what you just described, which is horrible. But you also have to feel, and I'm assuming in contact and in letters from young adults that have read the book and it connects with them of the gratification that comes from that.
Certainly, I'm very gratified to hear from readers who have connected with my work. I think that's really wonderful. You know, I've been publishing books since 2009, so I've been lucky enough to hear from readers for quite a long time now, and I still hear from them all the time. You know, on social media, I get emails from them, and of course, it's wonderful to know that your books are connecting with people. I do think that the book banning is devastating for readers as well, particularly queer teen readers, because these bans are sending out a message that reading queer books is shameful. They're saying that being queer is shameful, and it is not. I also want to be very clear with any readers who are listening, especially queer teen readers. There's nothing wrong with being queer, and reading books about being queer is great. I mean, I hope you find more. I hope you read more of them, and don't let anyone tell you that it's not okay.
When it comes to the accessibility of the material, Becky, and I guess I'm interested in this because yes, there's libraries, but also students have other ways of getting the material, but there is also the cost of it, which is what Melinda was talking about of difficulty of a young adult going on line and ordering a book perhaps. But so it makes it really fundamental that those be available as widely as possible and not with not in any special section, but just available.
Correct. So we talk a lot about there's a perception that, oh, we'll just you can just buy the book and that's their justification to remove or ban a book. But I think what's lost in the message is the first there's an assumption about economics and that all families have access and are able to pay for a book and order it and have it sent to their home. So there's that misperception. And then the other piece too is that there's also a lack of, or people just don't remember that not everybody even has access to internet at their homes. I live in Texas. We have so many rural areas. Wi-Fi is hard, even in the school district I work in, which is a suburb of Austin. We have some places in our area that doesn't they don't have very good Wi-Fi. So the whole thought of just, oh, just buy the book or, you know, have the money, that's false. And so having books, you know, a school library might be the only place a student would get those kinds of books, you know, again, and also public libraries aren't accessible everywhere either. We've got a lot of book deserts across the country, you know. And so again, in our school district, I have several schools that have to walk over, they'd have to drive over 2 to 3 miles. And so again, accessibility to a public library might not be there. So school library is critical. And again, as far as, you know, following rules regarding books and, you know, we all have policies that we follow. And as long as we're following, we should be aligned and okay. Again, though, there's just this thought that, you know, this one idea may not sit well with a parent, and which we are always transparent about the rights of parents for their own students. It's when they want to impose those requests on all students. And so every parent reserves the right to support their student and have that access, just like the one that doesn't want that others to have access. So.
Again, we're talking about the Eleanor Roosevelt Band Book Award Ceremony at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie, New York on Saturday, October 11th. You can find out more information by going to ERVK, which stands for Eleanor Roosevelt Valkill.org, ERVK.org for more information. Casey, from my understanding, this also is. This is not a red and blue issue, in meaning that if you live in, say, a blue state or a blue community, that you are going to not have not deal with book banning or censorship in some form, that it goes throughout communities throughout the country.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. And, you know, I think what we see even in our most recent reporting, you know, oftentimes we see pressures in red states that look a little bit differently than the way we see pressures in blue states. So we, you know, the states that are most commonly or have the highest number of book bans, you know, tend to be states with governance from the right. So that could be Texas and Florida and Tennessee. But we certainly do see, you know, instances where book bans are happening in more blue voting areas as well. But I think the pressures vary. So at the state level, you know, we see governor's office and legislatures sometimes putting in laws or policies and directives out of their Department of Education that is kind of pressuring and pushing school districts to remove books. In other cases, and this is more true in blue spaces, we're seeing like localized pressure from advocacy groups or from individuals and special interest, you know, networks that are running really well coordinated pressure campaigns, again, to put pressure on school boards and administrators to remove books at that, you know, at the district level. So again, these pressures kind of come both from the top and more at a grassroots area, which I think is one of the ways that we're seeing the crisis continue to escalate, particularly as the Trump administration has taken so much of the rhetoric that we have seen deployed by state leaders and these special interest groups putting pressure on school districts now at the federal level. So when, you know, our executive orders are now mimicking and parroting, you know, similar language that we saw really lead to book bans locally, you know, now we're seeing that federally as well. So yeah, certainly we do see this across red and blue states, across red and blue counties. But I will say, you know, the magnitude of this is really happening in more conservative voting areas and is really driven by those with extremely conservative viewpoints about what is and is not appropriate for students in schools.
Melinda, your words earlier really struck me about the psychological impact that it has on you and on writers. Talk a little bit about what keeps you going, of what keeps you wanting to share your creativity with your audience.
Well, in terms of why I keep writing, I think that I couldn't stop. I think I'm a writer. I'm a born writer. So I'm not
Sure.
going to quit. It doesn't matter what they try to do to ban my books. But I will tell you what keeps me going in the fight against censorship and the fight for the freedom to read. It is knowing other writers who fear these book bans and who are much more vulnerable than me. I mean, I'm a National Book Award winning author. I've had 7 books published. I have a great publishing team behind me. I'm not afraid of this, but I know many younger writers, debut authors, or just your regular old mid-list author struggling to make a living. I mean, I hear from them and I see how they are struggling and afraid of this environment. And what I found that keeps me going is connecting with them, like through Authors Against Book Bans and organizing on a local level. Like in Massachusetts, we have a coalition called Mass Freedom to Read. We're trying to finally persuade the Massachusetts legislature to pass a Freedom to Read law. This is the third year we're trying to pass it. So working with these people on the ground is really very inspiring, knowing that there is a community who wants to support the freedom to read.
What does a freedom to read law do?
Well, this is a great question. So, 13 states have passed freedom to read laws so far. I'm sure Casey can tell you more about them. Only one of them actually includes protections for authors and creators. That would be Rhode Island's freedom to read law. All of the other laws provide protections for libraries and schools, which certainly are experiencing a huge amount of harassment. But I think we're trying to raise awareness that book bans are economically devastating for authors, and we deserve some protections too. So we are really happy that in Rhode Island, their freedom to read law includes protections for them. And we're really hoping that in Massachusetts, the law here can also include protections for creators because we are writing the books that are being banned. It is literally our voices that are being silenced.
Casey, how can Massachusetts let Rhode Island one up itself?
How
Good
can? I mean, I
question.
think we
How could
have,
that happen?
our mass resistance folks on the ground. Maybe we'll, it's not over yet, so there's still time for Massachusetts
Yeah,
and
fingers crossed.
some good pressure from, folks working, really to defend and to push strong legislation forward is so important. And I think for, listeners in New York too, we do know that there's a Freedom to Read Act in New York that's on its way to the governor's desk for signature as well. Hopefully this upcoming, these upcoming seasons. So there's so much of this good energy that I think is really, just demonstrates that the folks that are banning, as Becky shared earlier, like the folks that are pushing for book bans are such a narrow group of individuals. Like there are so many authors and parents and students and educators and librarians who want to see these books stay and remain protected on their shelves. And not only that, but want to ensure that all students have access to diverse and inclusive literature in their public schools and public libraries. So there's lots of really amazing groundwork being done to just keep putting those protections in place, and then also to chip away where we have seen such like real rolled back on the restriction to one's right to read.
Becky, as we wrap up, I don't I and I hope you don't take this as a as an insult, any of you, but I don't find anything that any of you are saying to be especially radical. And I just am interested in the fact that this does come down to a case, doesn't it, where common sense often doesn't work.
I would agree. I think oftentimes, though, because of the means and how, in terms of what these groups are, organized groups are, their methods create a lot of emotion. And so, more often than not, we see decisions being made out of a reactionary space stance versus thinking through, having conversations, talking about policies, and that sort of thing. So, I think if just like anything else, we need to be thinking about what these actions of removing books and banning books would have on those that would no longer have access to them. And so we're often just, I think decisions are being made to cow down to that small vocal group that are maybe just deciding I'm going to check the books out and not reach ever return them to I'm going to protest. And so we just see these various ways to kind of wear people down. And so I think oftentimes, or what I see and know that works best is when our local communities come together, push back on those that are that small minority speaking up and saying, we want these books because if no one says anything or pushes back, things are going to happen, right? And so we just got to get our local communities engaged in reminding them what libraries represent, what that access of information means to the greater community.
I'm the son of a librarian. I wouldn't want to cross a librarian.
Appreciate that.
And I never did.
Yeah, you
I
know,
never
and
did.
I would love to hope. My hope is that people trust professionals, but I think that's what's the problem right now
Well,
is that
that's the common
professionals are
sense,
not being
sure.
trusted, and so I definitely need more of you.
Becky Calzada is a librarian and this year's Literary Freedom Award honoree. Congratulations to you, Becky. Congratulations again to Melinda Lowe, honoree for last night at the Telegraph Club. You will both be at the event that is happening on October 11th. Casey Meehan is with PEN America's Freedom to Read, their program director. The Eleanor Roosevelt Banned Book Award Ceremony happens at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie, New York. You can find out more by going to ervk.org, ervk.org. The event happens Saturday, October 11th. My thanks to all of you, Becky, Melinda, Casey. Thank you so much. It's going to be a wonderful evening. I have the great honor of interviewing Margaret Atwood. I can't wait to do that and to talk to her. And I can't wait to see all of you. Thank you so much for being with us. And best of luck in your efforts.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Be
Thank
well.
you.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.